my name's Amy and I am an addict.
Hi, Amy.
First of all, I want to thank the committee to think that I have something to say. Because for so many years, I felt ignored, I felt unwanted, and I felt unworthy. My clean date's 3/20/08. I say that so that I can remember 3/19/08. Because they tell me if I ever forget that pain that brought me to my knees, I just might use again. So 3/19/08 stays in my mind. 3/19/08 sticks with me and reminds me that I never want to be at that level again. Although I have been in that same kind of pain, clean. I'll be real honest, you know, like, recovery's not easy. Life keeps coming, and it keeps coming, and it keeps coming. But all I gotta do is keep coming, and keep coming. No matter what life throws at me. You know, not long after I got here, my son went to jail. My oldest, my protector, my best friend, my confidant, he went to jail. He was 20 years old, I think. And it was hard to see my baby, even though he's my oldest, he's my baby and he always will be my baby. That's right, tell him, huh? You know, but to see that, to see my daughter go to jail, to be clean and to be fired for the first time in my life. How the hell did I keep a job all through my addiction and never be fired, but get clean and have 5 years clean and be fired? Because I was honest. I was in a new, I had gone back to school, I had gotten my medical assistance degree, and I was working, I worked through a temp service. I was at 89 days in the temp service. They said, they want to hire you. So I went through the interview process, and I was honest, and I told about my record back in 1991. I was honest. The company, every interview went very well. I just knew I had it. Went home, I got a phone call from the temp service and said, you can't go back to work there tomorrow. And they said, we have fought for you. We told them your background came back fine, 7 years clean, no problems, nothing. But you were honest and you told them, and they will not hire anybody with a record. I'm fired. That next day, I go to court because my daughter has become unruly. And I ask juvenile court for assistance. I hear you, God. I ask juvenile court for assistance, and what do? They take my child from me, clean. Talk about pain. She looked at me and she said, how could you let them do this? And I said, you sat there and told the judge you weren't going to do anything different. You're coming home high. You're coming home drunk. You're not getting up. You're not going to school. We're fist fighting, literally ripping shirts off of each other's backs. I can't make him make a decision. This is now your life. This is your decision. So at 17 years old, my daughter was taken from me. I'm clean. How does this happen? That's where I felt. I was fired. I lost my daughter. Talk about being in deep despair. But I kept coming. And then my daughter runs from her aunt, who is her foster mother. She runs. My daughter, 17 years old, 3 months. I don't know where she is. But I ask that God that protected me and my addiction to protect her through the day. And when I go to sleep at night, I asked him to protect her just like he protected me. And he did. And then she reappeared, and then she disappeared. And then she reappeared, and she disappeared. You know, and this was the habit that we went to through until she was 18 years old. And she hated me. She despised me. She now lives with me again at 26. Thank you. She lives with me again at 26. And we have these awesome conversations. 60s, and my grandparents are raising me. So when I want to go to school and have my mom be there, my mom's not around. But my mom raises my sister. So why does she raise my sister and not me? You know, so I feel like this throwaway. But I had all the love. My grandparents loved me. It was the best thing in the world for me, my grandparents loved. They gave me all the love, all the understanding, all the gifts, all the schooled me right and traveled all across the country. Back to the 70s. And I became a brat because I expected everybody was supposed to give me everything. And I didn't have to work for anything. I didn't have to work for good grades. I didn't have to work for a car. I didn't have to work for money, insurance. When I worked, it was for me to do what I wanted to do. And I didn't fit in with anybody, so all I wanted to do was have friends. And the way I had friends was I bought the liquor. I could walk into a liquor store at 16 and get served. I could walk into a bar at 16 and get served. So that's how I had friends. But nobody really liked me. They just liked what I could give them. But I wouldn't let you get to know me either. Because if you got to know me, you just might leave me. And I had real abandonment issues because of my mother. And I still deal with those today. At 55 years old, I deal with abandonment issues. You know, I came into this program out of a 20-year relationship where I was beaten and put down mentally, physically, and emotionally on a daily basis. But I never left. And I made sure that he could never leave me because I had manipulated situations so much that he needed me. He didn't know how to pay bills. He didn't know money, what money was coming in. He didn't know what money was going out. And guess what? You didn't know how the money was flowing, so that meant I could just put it in my arm or put it in a pipe or put it in a bottle. So I manipulated situations because I just didn't like who I was. I never liked who I was. I hated myself. I weighed 260 pounds. I couldn't look at myself in the mirror. And when I look in the mirror today, I still see 260 pounds, even though it's only 175. I still see. I'm so afraid of becoming her again. And why? It doesn't matter what I look like on the outside. What matters is the work that I do on the inside. I found out through this program that I am a loving person. I'm a giving person. I can give to a fault. So I have to be very careful of that. I found out that I am intelligent. I found out that I am street smart too, that I didn't know I had, because I didn't I just went to my dealer's house and brought him a newspaper and came out with whatever I wanted. You know, I didn't have to go hang in bars or hang on corners or run like that. But I found out I got a lot of street smarts in me. And I think that's just the nature of addiction that taught me how to be cautious, that taught me how to be suspicious of everybody and everything, because, man, I was the first one you needed to be suspicious of. You know, but this program taught me that if I just take my hands out of the mix and just keep coming and just keep doing the work, but truly take my hands out of the situation and leave it to the God of my understanding and to the spiritual principles, that the right things happen, even though I don't think they're right. You know, I got into it. They give us a suggestion. No major decisions. Let's get the real suggestion from the literature. The literature suggestion is no major decisions in the first year. And now we put in our own spin. A relationship is a major decision. So now let's look at this. When we realize Job changes are major decisions. Moving is a major decision. Relationships are major decisions. Well, I had to move because I had to get out of that abusive relationship. Major decision. I had to get another job because I worked side by side with my soon-to-be ex-husband. Major decision. Well, those major decisions were beneficial to me, so why not let a relationship be beneficial to me? So I thought I had done some work on me, and I did, but not enough to make that major decision. And I got caught up in a relationship. They got caught up into moving in together. It took 8 years, I just kept on rolling the ball. And it ended up into a wedding. A big N.A. wedding. Everybody in their place was from N.A. It also ended up into front page of Pittsburgh N.A. News. Ha ha. Because it started to fall apart very fast. Because see, what I had done is I had made the idea of marriage, and I had made that idea of what a marriage is supposed to be. I made that my God. I made that what I strove for, rather than continuing to build the relationship that I was told I needed to have on a higher power. I made that marriage, that entity, my higher power. All I wanted to do was make this marriage work, because like the 20-year one failed, and I never wanted to be divorced, because see, that's what my mom was. My mom and dad were all divorced. My grandfather passed away, and my grandparents had shown me that 57 years worked. They showed me 57 years. My grandmother lived an additional, if my grandfather would have still stayed alive, they would have had 72 years of marriage when she died. He'd also been 105, but that's a whole other story. You know, but it just showed that it can work. And that's what I wanted. I wanted that to work. Well, I picked the wrong one. I stuck around way past the expiration date. The first one didn't work. So the second one's going to work. And I'm going to put my hands in it and make sure that it works. And I'm going to settle for some bullshit even before I walk down the aisle, and I'm going to make it work. Because I want it to work. I want to make this work. And again, like I said, front page of any Pittsburgh News. It didn't work because a couple newcomers were invited into this relationship that I did not agree with. So, here I am at the meetings, sobbing and cussing and fussing and getting up and telling y'all, like I sat on the edge of the bed for the third night in a row with a claw hammer. And I just wanted him to snore the wrong way so that I could kill him. And I wasn't kidding. I was serious. As I stand here today, I wanted to kill him. I had it plotted out. Because see, I have this history of abuse. And I came in and I said how when I backed him into the corner and I caught him with another woman, and I caught him and I had his phone in my hand, he put his hands on me. So now like all this PTSD comes back. And I'm having these flashbacks, and I don't want to get divorced, I just want to be a widow. And with that idea, like I've got it planned out, like they're going to put me in a rubber room for about 6 months. I only may remember three of it because they're going to dope me up so bad, Thorazine is going to have me spaced, I'm not going to know anything that's going on. And I'll get out on battered wife syndrome. Like, I've got this all planned. I've got money put away for an attorney. I've got it planned. Damn, I'm in trouble. So what I have to do is I have to come into the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous and tell my truth. Because if I don't tell my truth, I might just act on my crazy ideas. So I got up at the podium, and for 2 weeks I told how I plotted on killing him. because now I've made it premeditated, and I'm not cut out for a jumpsuit. I don't have an ass. And you gotta have a butt to have a cute, get to look cute in a jumpsuit, and I'm just not gonna look cute, so I can't do it, you know? So, like, I had to be honest, and I had to tell, and guess what? This fool still comes home. And I said, you're not afraid of me? And he said, no. And I said, I think you should be. Because I'm being honest. I'm telling my truth. And my truth is, I want you dead. And like, and then it came to the point where, like, okay, I can't kill him. So I'm driving down the road. And if I just make a left turn, in the middle of traffic, in front of the 18-wheeler, in front of the dump truck, just make a left-hand turn, this pain will end. At any given moment, a left turn. But you know what you guys told me? I have to make the right decision. And I have to take the right step. So I can't make a left turn because y'all keep telling me to go right. And I listened. And I came and I told. And I'm honest. Like, one thing it is like, I can be brutally honest. And that's a character defect, because I gotta put it love in it. You know, like you all told me, just keep coming back, and you gave me the love that I needed to keep coming. You gave me the love I needed so that I didn't kill him and I didn't kill me. You loved me unconditionally when I acted like an ass, and you loved me unconditionally when I didn't know how to behave right, and you loved me unconditionally when I got into my first fight, my first year of NA. First fight in my life, I'm 43 years old, and I'm whooping this woman's ass for sleeping with him. Hi, I married him. I continued the relationship and I married him. But if 1 year clean, I'm whooping her ass. Why? She's not the one who was in the relationship with me. Why wasn't I beating his ass? Or why wasn't I just leaving? You know, I was doing work on me, but here it is again. I need you to need me. Because you can't leave me. I can leave you, but you can't leave me. So you're out there with her, so you left me. So now I'm angry. I should be angry at you, and I'm angry at her. Why? You know, so I had to do a lot of writing. I had to really get in. And yes, I made an amends to her. That was easy. But then again, when she became the other woman a second time around, here I am at a picnic, kind of sort of like this. Have my grandchildren. This is before I wanted to kill them. But I have my grandchildren at the picnic, and my one grandson says, Grandma, I gotta go to the bathroom. So we have to go to the port-a-john. Who walks out of the port-a-john? And what do? I go on my behavior. And I said, did you have fun performing oral on my husband? But I said it in a much untactful way than that. And she went, oh, 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 and I said, I get a little bit louder. Did you have fun performing? And she was like, and by this time, like 10 people turn around and begin to look. My grandson goes into the bathroom. And she's like, I'm here with my husband. And I'm like, yeah, but did you have fun? And like this time, there's probably about 200 people at the picnic, and about half of them turn around and were like, oh shit, it's gonna happen. You know, but thank God I had women in my life who came and said to me, you're better than that. You've learned too much. You've done too much work. You're angry. You're hurt. Because see, what I learned for me is anger is a secondary emotion. Why am I angry? You've hurt my feelings. That's usually the first reason I'm angry, is because I've been hurt. Why am I hurt? Because I put unrealistic expectations on somebody to be the same person that I be, to behave the same way I do. That's me. How can I put that unrealistic expectation on you? And guess what? If they stand at the podium and tell you that's what they do, believe them. When somebody gets up here and tells you the truth, believe it. Because when I stand here The God of my understanding speaks through me, and I tell the truth. I may go out there and behave a whole different way because I want to look cute, and I want to be pretty, and I want everybody to like me. But when I get up here, I'm going to tell you, you F with me the wrong way, I'm going to plot a way to kill you. So, I keep doing work on me. Yeah, look at her twice, right? You know, I saw that look. So I did more work on me. I got real honest. I put a lot on paper. And I became okay with being alone. I became real comfortable with being with me. With nobody in the bed next to me. With nobody going out with me other than my girlfriends. And what happens? I fall in love with my best friend. He had been in my life for 7 years. And I loved him as a friend. Like, you know, and here was the funny thing is we always hung up the phone. Love ya, love ya too. Love ya, love ya too. We start dating, all of a sudden that stopped. Because like now we've gone into a different plateau. And so we're afraid to say that L word because you might take it the wrong way. When it's just I love you as my friend, but now we're playing in this gray area that's kind of... So the gray area has become very clear. And you know, I've never been happier in my life. But you know what? The happiest thing is I know is that like I love him, but if he walks out, I'm okay. That, you know, like having like, I don't want him to leave. I love him. But if he walks out, I'm okay. I could never say that in my life before. But the work that I've done, doing the step work, reading the literature. Like, I'm part of another home group. And what we're doing is we go through the journey continues. And we read section after section after section after section. And as we read it, we discuss it. And we read it and we discuss it. And like that, like, you know, when we look at the literature and the It Works How and Why, and it says, the enemy, complacency and procrastination can be the enemy of those with substantial clean time. Thanks for the word, I needed it. Substantial clean time. When that was written, substantial clean time was 10 years. That was substantial clean time because that was written so early in the writing of our literature. So like, what happens to those who've got 15, 20, 30 years? That's like one hell of a lot of substantial clean time. So what happens for them? The new literature comes out. And like I get to hear that I'm not the only crazy one that's still in the room. You know, like it has helped me with some things, but if I keep reading and I keep writing and I keep being honest and I keep speaking to people and I keep listening, and guess what? There's more to listening than just hearing. Because I can hear, you know, like Charlie Brown's teacher, all I want. But when I listen, that's funny because only a few of us know it. Nobody here knows that they're too young. Yes, thank you. Womp, womp, womp. If anybody's ever watched Charlie Brown, his teacher stood in the background and all you heard was womp, 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 womp. And that's what happens when we hear things. When we listen. When we listen. That's when we open our heart to feel the emotion, to realize the empathy, and to really digest what the other person is saying. And so when I listen to you, I learn. You know, like when, and here's the thing, all of this happened to me when I'm picking up my 10-year key tag. This wanting to kill people. Just one person. Just want to kill one person. That all happened. happened with 10 years at 10 years clean. I'm picking up my key tag, and I'm like making an ass out of myself, and I can't go back to the home group because, like, instead of being grateful, I'm just pointing out and cussing out. And so, like, I couldn't go back to some home groups until I did some work, until I did some healing. And then I could go back to a home group, and I had to apologize for my behavior at the podium. Because I didn't speak with gratitude at 10 years. I spoke with anger, and I spoke with despise, and I spoke... And I disgraced the podium. Yikes. But after some time and some healing and some work, I could go back and say, I apologize and never speak with that disgrace again. Because when I'm ever asked to speak, I'm filled with such gratitude that somebody thinks I have something to share. You know, like, this is the greatest honor, is to share what I've been through. And here's the hit. It's like when I was going through this, I didn't know some people, but I heard their significant other, their spouse, share how they were that dirty dog. But they worked on their relationship, and they continued to stay married. So, and they didn't use, and they had 20-some years clean now. So I need to find that woman, and I need to talk to her. So I call this woman. Who calls that woman? Who then she calls me. Because guess what? I'm a newcomer. 10 years clean. I never worked through this. I never knew how to get through this. When I was diagnosed with cancer, I never had it before. It was my first time. So what do? I call somebody who survived cancer. How did you get through it and not be afraid? When my kids went to jail, how do you get through it and know that they're going to be okay? I call somebody who's been there, and guess what? They may only have 2 or 3 years clean. They may only have 60 days clean. But guess what? They stayed clean through it. So I'm the newcomer at 14 years, and they're the experienced member. That's something that, like, resonates in my mind, that at any given moment, I can go through something, and I can be the newcomer. Because I don't know how to deal with that experience. And any experience can drive me to the point of where I want to self-destruct. So I utilize. There's a difference. When I use, it's very disrespectful. When I utilize, when I take the tools that were given to me through this program, when I take that information, when I take that relationship with the God of my understanding, and I use it to build myself up, and to not break down, I am utilizing what the gift of this program is. And it's recovery. It's changing who I was into somebody I want to be. Lost dreams awaken, new hopes arise. Man, like, I went back to school and then I got my bachelor's. And I was working in the field of recovery. And I was no longer of service to my position. A lot of things were happening. I was no longer of service. So I went out on interview after interview after interview. Let me just tell you, the Mario Lemieux floor of the Cancer Center is drop dead gorgeous. They've got this nice thing, nice grass area that goes out over on a roof. They got a putting green, all this beautiful stuff. It just didn't feel like that's where I was supposed to be. So I go on a Teams interview. Never walk into the building, never meet the people in person. But there was something about the energy that was transferred in that meeting. I said, that's where I need to be. So I go and I get a promotion in January. Tell you what God does. I just got promoted again Monday. What God won't do, when I stay lined up, when I stay prayed up, and when I do the right thing for the right reason, and the right reason is just to have another day clean and not to harm anybody. See, because it tells us in our literature, any day that we don't use is a successful day. And I had problems with that. Because I said, how successful is my day if I kill somebody? I didn't use, but I killed somebody. How successful is my day? To me, that's not a successful day. But guess what? It was successful that I did not use. So we all have to look at where the person's coming from. Maybe the best thing they could do that day is just not use. I never know what somebody else's mindset is. I never know the trauma that they're going through in the background. So when they come to the meeting and they act out, what do I need to do? I need to go and I need to find out what's really going on with them. How can I be of service to them? How can I just be a listening ear? Not just hearing, but truly listening and empathizing with what's going on in their life. So that I can be there for them to get them through to have another day clean. Because I don't want anybody. Look, I worked in treatment, like I said. I go home on Friday. I come back in on Monday and the mistress is in my unit. Like, really? I called everybody. I said, who admitted this? I got to walk on the unit and I got to deal with her and knowing that she... And that's where he's living in. You know, like, so I have to... But guess what? I never wanted her to die of the disease. I just wanted her to get clean. Because see, here was the thing. What he was doing to me, he was doing to her. So she wasn't the only one, but I had some tools that kept me clean. And she was too caught up and she couldn't stay clean. I didn't want her to die of this disease. I just wanted her to get clean. That was hard. That was hard. But I just wanted her to get clean. She came back and they went, got back together again, and she came back again. And this time I didn't stomp my feet. I just sat in my office and prayed. Because I had done some work. It's all about what do I do. It's not about what you do. It's never about what you do. It's about the perspective I take on it and the work that I do with it. Because you could step on my toes and I could be like, yeah, you didn't. I'm really not a mean person. I come off of like I'm a real Billy Badass, and I'm not. I'm a wimp like you would not believe. I'm the biggest wuss. I cry when there's deer dead on the side of the road. I'm the one who goes and picks the baby bird up and tries to put it back in the nest. You know, the grandkid gets a boo-boo. First of all, I try not to laugh because usually it's because they did something really stupid. And then I'm like, oh, grandma baby. You know, but I'm really a wuss. But I've been told I've been a bully in service. And so that's a character defect that I'm looking at. I don't want to be a bully in service. I've just been doing it for so long. And I just read policy after policy after policy. And I want to cross T's and I want to dot I's. And I tell you when you're wrong. And that's not how the policy states. And like I said, I'm learning on doing things in a more loving and caring way. So like when I oversee a few committees right now. And when in my phone, I open up my flap of my phone. And it says hotel, merchandise, auction, tickets and registration, treasurer. And if you're not on one of those committees, I suggest you go to your committee chair. If that doesn't work, you go to the vice chair that oversees your committee. And if they need some assistance, they can come to me. Because I need to learn to stay in my lane and not think I know everything. Even though I've been part of each committee. And I've done some work on each committee and I've overseen all the other committees. It's now time for me to learn to stay in my lane. But it wasn't until I had learned enough that I could learn I need to stay in my lane. So I don't want to be, like people actually send beat up, they were in a road rage accident. And they sent pictures to another committee member and said, this is what Amy does to you when you don't listen. And I was like, oh, am I really that bad? Am I really that scary? You know, like, but I would text him. He would say, like, who is this? And I said, I'm either your best dream or your worst nightmare. It's up to you how you take it, you know? You know, but that's, you know, so like I have to. to look at my behaviors. It's all about me. And this program finally told me, look in the mirror and don't be afraid of her. Look in the mirror and embrace her. And like I have to put post-it notes on the mirror sometimes and say, you are beautiful. You are loved. You are worthy. I have more in store for you. And you know what? The best thing is, the more in store, the bigger my dreams get. And the more in store, I have like the most, now my dreams are not a killing people. My dreams are like, I can't wait to go to Mexico. And after Mexico, it's gonna be Aruba. And after that, it's gonna be here. And after that, it's gonna be there. I'm grabbing life by the horns and I'm riding this bull until it's broken. Not until I fall off, but until I break it and my life is over. I'm going to ride this thing called life. Look, I put my seatbelt on a long time ago and I just didn't pick up. They told me it was going to be a roller coaster, and it has been. But I've never had so much laughter. I've never had so many tears. I've never had so much joy than what this program of Narcotics Anonymous has given to me, and with the relationship of the God of my understanding. Thanks for allowing me to share. I ain't killed nobody.
All right, thank you, Amy. Thank all you guys who showed up and stayed during all this, and the ones that were here and left. If it wasn't for you, this wouldn't happen. Circle up. Somehow. Did I break it?
You erased it.
Stop, I didn't.
No, you paused.
Get it all.